Hey, dear listener, do you enjoy listening to us ramble incoherently about Canadian politics and history? Boy, do we have a special fucking treat for you. We've got our first ever official live show at a bar.
It's at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street in Halifax on Sunday, May the 26th at 8 p.m. And if you go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, if you look at the banner at the top, it will take you to the tickets so that you can book a ticket and come and spend some quality time. It is going to be a very intimate affair. There are like only about 50 tickets available.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to drink a lot. We're going to quiz. Reese is going to quiz me at the end, but he's also going to quiz the audience and see if they know more than I do. And any alcohol you buy, Reese and I, we promise to drink it, no matter how much it is. If you want to hold our hair while we barf in the plants outside of the bar, we'll do that for you.
So go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, click the banner at the top, and on Sunday, May the 26th at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street, we will see you there.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
It is Katie, isn't it?
It's Katie. The extra T is
Katie,
just
sorry.
Thrown in there to throw you off.
Don't worry. I haven't got any vowels in my name. So
it's true.
Just quieting down, baby.
Per capita export value.
Libraries. Minister, are you embarrassed by your behavior today?
There's a lot of bleeding hearts around.
Do you have the fortitude or the gonads to stand up and come across here and say that to me, you son of a bitch?
Just watch me.
He certainly went too far, Mr. Speaker, when I saw him stick his tongue out.
Contemptuous disregard.
More than a slab of bacon talking here.
The disappointment you also feel is my responsibility.
I lost my temper.
What is the nature of your thoughts?
The word was F-A-R-T.
Hello and welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring. This is a weird episode because Jesse isn't here because he's currently drinking beer while trying not to fall into active volcanoes in Italy. But I am joined by Katie Law from Pod of the North, Canadian podcast insider and expert to talk about. What are we talking about, Katie?
We are talking about what the heck is going on with Canadian politics and the internet. And podcasts and all that stuff. I think it's just so
censorship.
Broad. C-11, C-18, why people are freaking out about censorship, all that stuff. You know, it's good. It's good times here on the internet.
It is. And I think that we're at an interesting time where the conversation is either Justin Trudeau is a communist authoritarian who's trying to shut down freedom of speech, or people that go in, I don't quite understand this. Nothing's happening. This doesn't change my what I view and how I view it. There's like, and I find it hard to find middle ground sometimes with people like, but it's a very big debate and is also getting a lot of outside influence from around the world. People are paying attention in the US and other countries to like, what is Canada doing with, And I think you're probably perceiving that too, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. There's been tons of articles that have come out about C-11 and C-18, which is C-11 is the Online Streaming Act. C-18 is the Online News Act. They kind of do the same thing almost, but one is in charge of online news and one is in charge of like streamers and all digital content. And basically everybody's freaking out around the world thinking that like it is reducing freedom of speech. It's interacting with Canadians' freedom of speech. People have called it like the most repressive freedom of speech rule, like in the whole world. Like Canadians can't even talk to each other on a daily basis. Like it's, people are freaking out, including like Elon Musk, which this is what I think really brought it to like global notoriety. Yeah. Where he said, what did he say? I wrote it down somewhere. I need to read it to you, because he said, Trudeau is trying to crush free speech in Canada. It's shameful.
Maybe Elon should spend more time focusing on Mars. that's what he said he wanted to do. So I don't know. But anyway, the thing that happens to me as well, I have people from like family and friends from the UK going, why did Justin Trudeau stop people from accessing the news? And like those, because that's the kind of like, that's the stuff that travels in comments and commentary. And like, I'm like, no, it's a lot more complex than that. Yes, some platforms block the news and blah, blah, blah. And I try and explain, but it's a much easier narrative to say Justin Trudeau stopped people reading the news or something.
Yeah.
And at the same time, is like now, and I know that like you see a lot of this, his political opponents say, you've started funding the news in Canada, and therefore you own the news, so you control the mainstream media narrative because you're subsidizing newspapers, which is kind of, again, like, I don't know, I think there's a valid point when you talk about government influence in funding newspapers and their editorial freedom. I'm not an expert who can talk on that, but I don't think it's not a totally invalid point, but it's still more of an extreme projection of what they think that plays out as, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces of this that you're like, in principle, it makes sense that people would be like kind of weary about it. But in reality, it's like, okay, you've really blown this up into something it's not. Because the fact of the matter is, when it comes to news in Canada, journalists have not been making enough money to like get by, basically, because newspapers used to be a thing. There used to be advertisers that would buy space on those newspapers, and therefore money was coming in for news publishers. And now that's not really happening anymore, and people don't want to see ads online. So news publishers can't make the same amount of money they used to when newspapers were a thing. And journalists are not making any money. So that's why Canada wants to subsidize these things so that journalists can actually make a living and report on things. And as far as I know, the Canadian government isn't regulating like what people are saying. There is like freedom of speech stuff in our like Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And the only things that are like really regulated are like hate speech and propaganda and like gross sexual things. So like, you know, pretty typical things that you don't want people spreading around in the news, you know?
I kind of perceive it as the government bailed out the newspaper industry. It was a government bailout, like during a financial crisis where they go, hey, we're going to bail out these banks so that, you know, the banking system doesn't collapse. And I think that, but you don't necessarily say, oh, now the government controls housing or the finance sector because they bailed it out. It's not entirely the same kind of comparison, but it looked to me like the Canadian government was like, oh, this industry is going to die unless we somehow prop it up a little
totally
bit.
Totally. I think it's a good comparison. Yeah, I think that's a good comparison.
And I was spoiled. Like the BBC is well funded for like grassroots reporting as well as kind of like regional and national reporting in the UK. And like Canada is expected to do something very similar with much less resources, in my opinion.
This is what I was excited to talk to you about, Rhys, because I know that you didn't grow up in Canada, so you don't have like the same very deeply rooted Canadian experience of like hearing the same songs on the radio over and over and over again, and like growing up with Our Lady Peace and like a bunch of CanCon, and then meeting American friends later on in your life and realizing that none of them know those songs. You're like, don't you know this one song that used to like play on the radio all the time? They've never heard that song, and that is because of broadcast regulations. So broadcast regulations have been around for a long time, and they're there to basically give Canadian content creators and like musicians and TV and radio like funding so that they can be paid, but also they're trying to like promote Canadian content to Canadians so that we're not just constantly consuming American content, which is very much the case accidentally pretty much all of the time. So they really wanted like Canadian content to be in our faces easier. So that's why we have Canadian content restrictions. And because of this Broadcasting Act has existed for a long, long time. And it was based off of like radio and television. And now we have the internet. So it's been upgraded to then now look at, you know, podcasts and social media platforms and news that's being distributed on these social media platforms and like streamers like Disney Plus and Netflix. So now that's where like all this conversation has come from in talking about all this stuff, is that Broadcasting Act has been upgraded to think about the internet. And now everybody's freaking out.
Well, I mean, the thing is that it says, especially with those streaming platforms, that Canadian content has to be promoted in Canada. Or there's, you know, they're alluding to the fact that there should be some kind of requirement to do it.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh my God, but I want to watch, you know, I want to watch Sopranos for the fifth time, you know, and you know, I don't want to have to watch Canadian stuff instead.
Yeah,
they don't have a Sopranos yet.
The Office is, you know, my like comfort show. I put it on when I'm exactly. making dinner every single night. Like,
exactly. And I think, but I think that, and they were talking about, oh, what are they going to do? They're going to have like a banner as you turn it on that says watch Canadian content. The funny thing is, if you go on Netflix and Disney Plus has a big banner that says Oh Canada, and is literally just a selection of Canadian specific content for Canadian users of Disney Plus. I feel like they preemptively fulfilled that requirement because mm-hmm. they were like, hey, as a business, maybe we should be relevant to Canadians and
yeah.
not just look like we're just rinse and repeat American stuff. I think that like they're smart businesses. They have all the algorithmic data and they understand that some people are looking to where can I see all of Ryan Reynolds' films in one space? Because I support Canadian content.
I would definitely support
that's possible.
That category.
Exactly. So like, and I think Netflix does the same. Like they do their, here's the top 10 shows in Canada mm-hmm. this week or tonight. Like, I think the Canadian government's saying, hey, can you just make sure that there's visibility of Canadian content? I don't know why it's such a dramatic reaction. I think it's because there is some government suggestion. And I mean, the internet is this free libertarian place where like there are no rules, and the whole, you know, the dream was that it would circumvent traditional systems to elevate humanity to some kind of nirvana status. So they're against, you know, those systems kind of treading on those toes. But I don't know, as someone yeah. who kind of knows a lot of Canadian filmmakers, and like Jesse's a Canadian filmmaker, if he hasn't fallen in a volcano, and like I'm friends with people like Taylor Olson, who's a really like really good up and coming director. I say up and coming, he's established himself pretty well. Like to see his work on Disney Plus or Netflix or Amazon Prime, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I'd be like, that's cool. You know, he's an important voice in the next generation of Canadian filmmakers. Mm-hmm. I think other Canadians would like to see his work. I don't know. I don't recoil with disgust. You know what I mean?
Well, the interesting part of all of that is that at this point in the online streaming act, when it comes to like streamers and everything, and Canadian filmmakers, nothing has actually happened other than the RTC, the CRTC asking streamers to register with them. And like, that's it.
Yeah.
So they just want to know, okay, Disney Plus exists, Netflix exists, Amazon Prime exists, Crave exists, all these things. And with that happening, I think maybe some streamers have just seen, let's take it into our own hands and like make Canadian content accessible for Canadians so that like we don't really have to maybe deal with the CRTC when we figure out what kind of regulation actually looks like. Maybe we've already got there and they're already happy with what we've been doing, and we don't have to like pay them money and we don't have to do all this stuff. Because ultimately what really deeply happened was that the other side of this, the Online News Act, basically the CRTC asking online news providers like Google and Facebook, like we've all seen like our aunts and uncles posting articles from the Toronto Sun or whatever on Facebook, and Google is obviously thriving off of news that exists. So once the news stuff came out, Meta was actually not super pleased about the fact that Canadian content might be messed around with, and they pulled all Canadian news from their platforms. So now Canadians cannot post any like news links or anything from CBC and the Globe and whatever it might be on Facebook or on Instagram. So that was kind of like, okay, we've seen this what could happen if Canadian tech big tech companies and distributors don't want to play ball. They could just leave Canada altogether and be like, we're not going to distribute any Canadian content. So that's where I think like people are kind of worried about when it comes to streamers, that like that might be the case in all of these platforms, like Spotify when we're thinking of podcasts, maybe TikTok when we're thinking of like social media platforms. So I think people are just like, well, maybe like Canadian content will not actually show up. And the other funny part of this is that because this is mainly just consisting of tech platforms that'll need to pay the government and register with them, a lot of all these tech platforms are private companies. They have secret sauce algorithms that they don't want to share with anybody else. And they definitely don't want to share with the Canadian government and have the Canadian government be like, well, maybe you should like implement these search algorithms or like these IPO algorithms or whatever. I don't think I used the word IPO. I meant IP, not IPO. But they just don't want to share their algorithms with anybody to make Canadian content easier to find or prioritize Canadian content in any way. And that's just like a business practice. So there's all these little moving, little messy parts where you're like, there's a reason for tech platforms to back out. And we've seen one back out already. So that's where I think people are a little bit nervous as well.
And the funny thing for me is, and any new Canadian, like speaking as an immigrant, and other immigrants would, and other people who would just maybe like a bit more techy, the VPN, the virtual private network, allows you to access the internet as if you're in any country in the world that yes. you choose to be. So all of this is totally irrelevant. If you download a very cheap VPN or a VPN service, you can go, oh, no, do you know what? I'm just going to access the internet through the USA. You know, the whole thing can be entirely circumvented with software that has existed for a long time and is incredibly easy to download and affordable.
So. Yeah. And like also if platforms were to prioritize Canadian content, they're not going to be like removing The Office and like all of those things. Like you're still going to have access to them. It's just making Canadian content easier to find. And the other big part of this is that obviously with regulation, they're hoping that the CRTC is hoping that funding will come into the Canadian ecosystem of creators. So that funding will support content to be made, and like we can see more Canadian shows showing up that are like globally renowned, and we can have a shot at getting paid for art, which is like so rare. So that's another big thing that's hoping to happen through this kind of regulation, because like let's be real, Google and like Meta and all these tech platforms are really benefiting off of a lot of Canadians using their platforms to share stuff. And, you know, they've got money to spend. Like, this is just going to be like a drop in the bucket in terms of like funding Canadian creators. What then happens, though, is they're like, well, if we're funding Canadian creators, then we've got to put money back into like the whole world, basically. And like, oh, man, now we got to pay for the content that we're distributing.
Exactly.
God damn.
We're just a platform. We're just a platform, though.
We're just a curator. So, you know, now big tech platforms have to spend money, which they don't want to do.
No, it makes sense. I get as a business why they'd want to fight it, definitely.
Exactly.
But they, I guess like the thing with them is they've become almost such an essential part of life. The rules are different for them because I just remember when the BBC didn't have a website. There was a bunch of shows where the producers and the people working on the shows had built their own websites for TV shows and radios, and the BBC went through this unification process where they basically said, no, there's got to be one BBC website that accesses all websites. This is how old I am. And then they unified all of those websites under one BBC model, and it kind of they were talking about the fact that a lot of the reporters were then kind of using Twitter and Facebook. But the BBC had this thing where you couldn't show brands. It was the rules were you had to put a piece of tape over your kind of North Face jacket logo. Even reporters, there was no branding allowed in it at all because it was a public broadcaster. And they've relaxed those because they're like, everyone wears branded clothes. As long as it's incidental and you're not like getting the jacket for free off North Face while you read the news, then, you know, that's a different thing. So they then accepted the fact that they had to talk about Twitter and Facebook, even though they were brands and they were private businesses, because they're like, where else are we going to do this? There is no other, you know, there's no balance in terms of going, use a platform like Twitter. You had to say, no, I'm on Twitter. And obviously then, you know, Twitter was it is X became it was such a big part of the news cycle, generally speaking. So I think like it doesn't stand as like a they are businesses, but they're so integral in society. Like when I escaped, where we like were evacuated from wildfires as a family last summer, most of our information came through the resident Facebook group, not from the government or anywhere else. So I had the most up-to-date information on what was going on through that platform. So it almost becomes like a utility. I don't know. Like, how would you treat it? And so it has to be regulated to a certain extent because it's not, it's similar to how you get it. It's the flow of electricity or water to your house. It's the flow of information to your house or communication to the world. So I don't know what that means and how you would kind of like frame that, but it can't be treated as like just another business, I guess.
Yeah, and the same sort of thing happened as well with the fires in Whitehorse last year as well. Like there was one community radio station that was really like updating their website, and that became sort of the go-to for a lot of residents in the area. I think it was Cabin Radio, and otherwise, yeah, they were using Facebook groups, but people couldn't post articles, so they were taking screenshots of the articles and uploading those instead. And like, so people will go around these regulations anyway. If a tech platform like Meta were to back out and did back out from sharing Canadian news, people will find ways to go around it. But yeah, like it's everything right now. I call like a yet. So we've seen stuff happening, and like I'm cool with it so far, but I don't know what's going to happen yet.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. With a CTRC, like talking as like people who are immersed in the podcast industry, you know, that when that bill came out and they required all podcasts or podcast organizations with a revenue of more than, was it 10 million that had to register? Now, my reaction was, that's not a big deal because the CTRC, I don't know, they're going to get a hard lesson in realizing how few podcasters make $10 million a year. And that, especially in Canada, and also, you know, you maybe have like, I can understand Apple, Acast, larger platforms, you know, Libsyn, Advertisecast, they're companies that have large revenue, but they are platforms essentially. But do you think like a lot of people were saying this is just the start? So were they then going to go, hey, everyone who earns over $1 million now has to register, or $10,000. I don't know. I mean, I don't know where I stand on it. I feel like the legislation was written by people who don't understand the industry at all. So maybe I worry that I know people worry about it, but I kind of didn't feel fear that there was some kind of, that it was going to grow into something despotic or terrifying for the industry, I guess.
Yeah, it's weird because like my impression of that was, and like this is also vague, so people are really trying to make sense of it, like you and I right now. My impression of that was that it was like audio and podcast distribution platforms that make over $10,000. But I don't know, because it also could refer to like studios and like networks that have a bunch of podcasts. It's so strange. So yeah, I kind of assumed the only people registering with the CRTC when it comes to podcasts would be like Apple and Spotify and Amazon and things like that that are definitely making like over $10 million off of podcasts. It will no longer be Google, but it could be Google too, because YouTube is becoming like a big part of the podcasting space as well. So I figured like those would be the platforms that would be registering. But like the whole point of of this is to have platforms pay out into the creation of Canadian content. So if, like, you know, if podcasters want to make money off of this bill, I feel like they're also going to have to register, right? Because, like, how do you get the money? So I think, like, that is an interesting thing that I see coming, is that people will need to register their podcasts in some capacity in order to get paid out by platforms that their podcasts are hosted on. That's just sort of like me connecting the dots a little bit. And I think if you are afraid of the government and you don't want them to have, like, any information on you or your podcast, then yeah, you might not want to register with the CRTC. But I'm personally down. I would do it as long as it's easy and, like, not complicated and has, like, a bunch of paperwork. Like, I think it needs to be super simple. There needs to be, like, an easy dashboard where people can, like, log in to something on the CRTC. There should not be any paperwork. It should be digital, and you should be able to access funds and, like, sign up for funds in some capacity. Like, that needs to all be thought through, I think, in a very simple way, because this has to work. Like, the government takes a long time to do everything too. So, like, who knows, like, when this is actually, who knows what even the state of podcasts is going to be by the time this is all sorted out, you know? This could be years.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I could create a new RSS feed in less than 5 minutes. I could copy my show multiple times within an hour onto new multiple feeds. Like,
yeah,
I get that, like, hey, if you register your podcast, then you can also apply for grants to fund your podcast. Would be a great carrot on a stick for a lot of podcasters in Canada to go, oh my God, yeah, I want an incubation grant to get my podcast going, or I can spend that on marketing, or I could buy a microphone, or whatever it is they want to do to get going. Like, if they offered that, I could see why it would be appealing for Canadian content creators. But if you take the carrot off the stick and you just have a stick, I don't know how they would ever police podcasting.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's so easy to make new shows. Like,
I wonder if you'll have to, like, trademark your podcast name in order for it to be considered, like, because news publishers have already been registered with the CRTC for a while. So I think it'd be a similar sort of process. And I'm guessing news publishers like Toronto Star, CBC, I guess they have trademarks. So I guess they would expect sort of any podcast that would want to be involved in this and make money off of these platforms would have to trademark their podcast. And, like, maybe that would be a bit of an exclusionary tactic from getting all these small podcasters from doing it. Like, if you have the money to spend on a trademark, then you'll get money because you're more established, or whatever anybody considers that to be. I don't know. We'll see. It's so messy.
I'm one of those people who, like, I think that, like, a lot of podcasts don't have the intention of making money. They're just doing fun, creative projects. Some of them make money by accident. Some of them have a strategy, like a fast growth strategy, where they want to make money. But, like, through my business, we make podcasts that the intention is is about sharing a story or like changing a narrative or like transforming people's ideas around a particular topic. It's PR and communications. There's no revenue generation from the audience directly. It's much more of a, hey, these are important stories. We need to tell them. And like, you know, maybe like 99% of podcasters will have sunk more money into their project than they'll ever make from it and time. Mm-hmm. So the burden of regulation on them seems laughable. I think that like when you do have shows of, I think it's about scale. I think when you have shows that become larger media operations that are almost, you can see like a lot of podcasts that grow into a media operation with multiple platforms. You know, they've got TikTok and they've got Instagram alongside their podcast and a growing YouTube. I think that's a different beast. But when it's kind of, you know, four friends getting drunk talking about sci-fi films once a month, I don't see why the CTRC needs a role in that, why that benefits society.
It is funny because the state of like Canadian podcasts is much different, because I can see something working, this being more relevant for a lot of things that I see happening in the US, where there's a lot of podcast production studios / networks. They're kind of both. So they have like an actual studio space where people can come in and record, and their mics are like branded. There's one called Dear Media. And you see a lot of sort of like American celebs using their space, and then their podcast is therefore also a part of like a larger network, and they have like a big push in terms of like social media content and the celebrities that they're working with, and like clearly they've got some money in order to even have a studio and like push out all of this content. I think those would be the kinds of businesses that would be registering with the CRTC in some capacity, but like those don't really exist in Canada. It's actually wild.
No.
Like Sonar was the closest thing to that, but they are like they're a small business. Like they're nowhere near like the level of that. So it's just, it seems like a different ecosystem, and almost like the regulation works better in the States than it does in Canada. We just aren't,
well, even like,
we aren't big enough.
No, and even like my business, like we have multiple recordings, like half of them are remote, half of them in the studio, but anywhere between 5 to 15 episodes recorded per week with our team. And we're putting out multiple shows per week. Bi-weekly, monthly, across like all of our clients. You know, like I said, like we've got like anywhere between actively running, usually somewhere between 25 and 60 shows, depending on if the season has ended or they're kind of, you know, ramping up. But none of those shows are kind of, it's a lot of it is, we have some clients in the US and the UK, but there's a lot of, there is a lot of Canadian content being produced, but it tends to not be broadcast content. It's much more messaging around, you know, like Beyond Research, the podcast we make. It's about educating people about what the scientific investment in Nova Scotia in research is doing to benefit society. So it's a very direct, and I don't know, like, that is Canadian content, but it's not like the same as a CBC show in that sense. It's an organization sharing its story with the world. And I don't know how that would apply to, you know, that. Are you going to start doing the same to corporate videos on YouTube? Do you know what I mean? I don't.
It's weird.
The lines are so blurred.
Like, yeah, and then the CRTC has like a facts and myths page about stuff, about just like questions that people have. And it says a person who creates a video or audio content and creates a podcast is not a broadcaster and is not a broadcaster. It's like not considered under a modernized version of the Broadcast Act. So like technically like individual creators shouldn't be impacted by this in any way. It's just like distributors. It just is so weird. Everything's so vague. And you're like, basically, I saw a really great quote about this, and that it was that the CRTC has said we're going to regulate podcasts, but we're not going to tell you why or how. Because we don't know.
I honestly just think is that they don't know yet. I don't think
part
of them registering those organizations making 10 million or more a year is to understand who the hell is out there.
Yeah.
Because how else would you do it? They need to know, okay, what does this even look like? And to start the threshold at 10 million, shows that they're kind of like, oh, well, they're comparing that to like Rogers or those kind of organizations. Then they're looking out and like, I don't know, the five people who replied. They go, oh, wow, I'm just this, you know, I think part of it is them feeling their way blindly across an industry that is totally decentralized and not easy to navigate if you're not kind of involved in it, I guess, or kind of have been in it for a while. And it's interesting because I like being playful with it. And when the bill went through, I put a little fake story about our podcast out on social media saying, and I was to gauge what the reaction would be like. I was basically, that's it. Our podcast is officially closed down. Thanks, communism, was basically the kind of the tangle of it. Just being playful. And like half the people like did like a laugh emoji and the other half were like, oh my God. Like, it's like, I can't believe this happened. And it was just more of a, hey, let's be playful and show that, like, I had some people message us going, are you really being closed down by the government? I was like, no, it's just a joke.
Yeah. Again, nobody's being closed down by the government. It is all up to the private companies who are being impacted by the government. They are the ones deciding what's happening to everybody. So I feel like that's the thing that needs to be like highlighted for everybody, because everyone's like, the Canadian government, Justin Trudeau exactly. Hates podcasts and free speech. I'm like, no, I don't think Justin Trudeau even really understands what's happening with all of this either. All he knows is that he can no longer post his CBC articles on Facebook.
All he's doing is waiting to retire so he could launch his own podcast. And speak to world leaders and get a front page get on the front page of Apple with a nice black and white photo. That's his plan.
Can we talk about let's talk about the kind of podcast we want Trudeau to create when he leaves office.
Yes, exactly.
So I think I want him more to enter the divorced dad territory and have a more of like a
celebrity personal, divorced dads.
Yeah. Like I want him to invite on fellow celebrity divorced dads and then host like a podcast about living as a divorced dad.
Or it's called Wife Number Two, and it's him interviewing potential suitors.
I feel like I need to look up if that's a podcast.
Justin's Wife Number Two. It's actually be a good reality TV show.
The Bachelor, but Trudeau style?
Yeah, exactly.
He's
just got a big house on the lake, and they're all in there living together.
Okay, confirming there is no podcast called Wife Number Two. It is available for you, Trudeau, if you are listening. Go ahead.
I'm gonna claim it, and then he'll have to buy it off me in a few years.
Oh yeah, make sure you get the domain too, wifenumber2.com or .ca.
Yeah,
this is Canada after all.
And I'm going to design the cover art for that podcast. I just can't. It's in my head now. I won't be able to sleep until I've actually produced it.
He's gonna get it tattooed on somebody's body as well.
Or find a really good Justin Trudeau impersonator and just start making the show already. Get it? So,
you could with AI. You could with AI. Exactly. You don't even need a person.
It's really scary. I'm worried. We've got like over 360 episodes of our show, and I am so worried how easy it is for someone to clone my voice.
Have you set up your safe word with your family yet?
I should.
You should.
But I got to explain how that works first to my wife and the four kids. I don't think they'll get it.
So. Basically, you just need a word that everybody knows and that only people in your family know, I mean. And then that way, if they get a phone call from you one day and it seems like weird, they can ask you what the safe word is. And then if you can't say the safe word, then that's not you. Or you can, like, if it seems unsafe, you can, like, try and integrate the safe word into a conversation. Because the safe word is so random that, like, only you would know that, okay, it's being weirdly, like, integrated into this conversation, you know? I've had this conversation.
I think the whole – people are having weird conversations because of AI. My 7-year-old son last night asked Alexa if she would marry him. And she started going, well, how well do you know me? And she gave him a quiz, like asking her favorite color and her favorite food. And I was like, this is weird. This is a 7-year-old boy speaking to being groomed by an AI.
This is the other exciting episode that I'm excited for you to do, because there is an entire like innovation commissioner in Canada. His job is innovation. And this has been like a massive conversation happening in Canada around regulating AI and not having the conversation around not enough people having this conversation, who's in charge of it, what's going to happen with AI. It is very interesting to listen to and just hear where people's heads are at.
The thing I always find interesting, though, is that it's one thing for Canada and the Canadian government and Canadians to have a conversation about it, but I feel like there's very little control or influence that will have, if you know what I mean. It's good because that AI, like,
are you saying democracy isn't working, Rhys?
I'm just saying the internet is totally borderless. That's my point. And the danger, I guess, is that unless that conversation is then had internationally, I kind of feel like it's will still be affected by other countries. It only takes one country to go no rules, no regulations with AI. And I feel like that could just, you know, have an impact for everyone, I guess, globally. Mm-hmm. AI is crazy. But I went down a rabbit hole kind of looking at, like, say I did my fake post saying the government has shut us down. But I was like, well, what if actually, like, I don't know, Jesse said something really nasty about Justin Trudeau, and the government then were like, no, we need to shut this podcast down, which wouldn't happen. It'd be great for our publicity if it did, but we both realistically know it's not going to happen. So I looked into kind of podcasts essentially being deplatformed. And as you said, like, is the point you made earlier was the individual platforms can deplatform. So when, for instance, it was Steve Bannon was banned by YouTube, Twitter, and Spotify because he called for the beheading of Dr. Anthony Fauci and the FBI director Christopher Wray, and his podcast was deplatformed by the major platforms. Mm-hmm. Apple didn't. They did like apparently put like a. They indexed it so it wasn't as discoverable. But also, even if Apple had taken it off, it was still accessible on so many other podcast apps because the RSS feed existed. Mm-hmm. And you can host an RSS feed anyway. Like, it's like, that's the beauty of it. Like, it's, I don't know how you would place an RSS feed.
I'm only wondering if, like, because there are so many easily RSS feed providers that you can, like, set up, make an account with, like Acast and Buzzsprout and different things like that. Like, they must have terms and conditions that you sign up for when you create something that you're like, I agree not to spread hate speech. And they could probably remove the RSS you from, like, you just remove your RSS feed. But you could create another account, or you could just make one somewhere else, or you can just code your own RSS feed.
Exactly. And the thing is that, yes, you're going to lose your subscribers. Without a doubt, you'll lose your subscribers. But at the same time, if you have enough followers on other alternative platforms, then you can always, hey, don't worry, here's the new link to the podcast if you want to listen.
Yeah.
It's very, you can keep like almost like a nomad, keep moving around your RSS feed to a host that doesn't care, mm-hmm. To a place that, you know, where it's totally fine. But I think that like that's the consequence was that like it was very hard for him to be taken off the air in a podcast sense. And even like Alex Jones, like the mm-hmm. the people have tried to wipe him off, but like the show is still available on like a lot of the smaller apps like Castbox, and also there's a lot of small startups in the podcast industry who are kind of creating their own mini kind of podcast apps and innovating, you know, and maybe there's like two or three people work for those companies. And the idea of them being responsible for moderating all of the podcasts that could be accessed through mm-hmm. their app is, you know, it's not economically viable for them as a business, and it's almost impossible for the bigger organizations anyway, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if the government, like if the platforms want to deplatform, they can, but, I guess they're going to be reliant on a lot of like citizen activists reporting specific shows to them for that mm-hmm. kind of discovery.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it's totally unpoliced and Wild West.
Yes. So. Yes. It's the nature of the content too. Like, because these bills, like C-11 and C-18, they're essentially just like modernization bills for broadcasting. Yeah. And nothing has really officially been decided or moved forward with. Like, I think the only things that we've seen so far have been like preemptive measures. So that just like makes this whole conversation just like a little bit chaotic because it's just all over the place.
Exactly. I don't know. I the way I see it going is that the government is playing catch up. So by the time the government does play catch up to where we are now, everything would have already have moved on.
So far. That's what I think too.
Always going to be a slow creep trying to play catch up. And no one, the government is never going to surprise anyone and go, "Aha, we got 52 steps ahead of you." On this, I just don't see it happening.
No, it's definitely not happening.
So, what would you say if people wanted to kind of find more information about this, or like if to get like we're talking about how much of a like a mess it is, where would you kind of go for like reporting to kind of access good reporting or reliable information? Because it is we're spoiled for options, but totally. What's the phrase? A wealth of choice is a poverty of attention, or whatever. I don't know. Butchering.
I don't know.
You know what I mean.
Pretty legit. I mean, I did write about this a couple of times on Pod the North, and I consciously tried to listen to and read articles from like a variety of sources just to kind of like see what people are talking about and how people are reacting to it and what are the sort of the major themes coming up. And that's given me a good perspective on sort of like who's freaking out about free speech and why, and who is sort of more frustrated with these bills because they haven't been fully articulated and they're just too vague to make any decisions off of. So those seem to be like the main discussions around this is free speech and just like, what the hell are these bills for real? Like, let's be real here. And one of my favorite people though to follow just for things about regulation is Vass Bednar. She writes a really great newsletter called Regs to Riches. And she's been a guest and somebody that a lot of folks, a lot of media and networks look to be a commentator on regulation and stuff like that. So she's been somebody that I think can articulate this stuff very well and someone that's trustworthy. So I really like her work. And so I'll listen for places where she's sort of been on podcasts and in the news and stuff like that. But I do think it is important to kind of just do what I did, Google keywords, find, see what comes up and give it a browse and just have like the media literacy to consume it with like a critical eye and just see like what resonates with you, what doesn't. And if anything is really like starting to make you feel some type of way, then maybe take a sec to reflect on like what it is that you're nervous about and just try and see what the reality is versus You know, expectations versus reality. Like you might be freaking out one moment, but then when you really get to dissect different perspectives, you're like, huh, I guess I don't need to freak out yet.
No. And I think that's it as well. It's like people are swimming against a tide of clickbaity headlines that are designed specifically to get an emotional reaction. But often, and I'm guilty of this, I say this as someone who does this all the time, I won't read the full article. Or often no articles are behind paywalls. So like sometimes you have this lasting memory in your head of the kind of shock headline that didn't provide the entire context of the story. And one of the things like I've had to do, especially with this issue, is to kind of make sure that I am taking the time to read all the, and also like who did they talk to? Where were the sources from? And I think that that's it. Is if you read something that, also, if you read something that feeds into your own bias, I think you always got to make the effort to kind of read the detail just to, because you don't want to, you'd slide further into the echo chamber of confirmation bias that is don't just feel validated by headlines. You've also got to read the ones that scare you and the ones that make you feel like you were right.
Totally. That's why I've also been really into listening to podcasts about this stuff. Mm. Because you get the same sort of detailed information, but the headlines are less like in your face and you kind of just enter into a podcast ready to learn. And I've definitely listened to the same podcast like a couple of times over just to like really break down and understand like what they're saying, because sometimes you really have to process information that takes like a certain extent of reading. So I'll stop a podcast and like jot down some notes, and that'll kind of help me figure out like what I'm learning here, kind of thing. But I've really liked listening to a lot of podcasts because they're free and you can get a really great variety of voices and perspectives, because there are so many people talking about stuff like this. And exactly. Some of them might be experts, some of them might just be creators who are a bit nervous. So you can get a lot of range of perspectives that you might not normally get in written media, because you're also getting opinion as well, which is interesting. Interesting way to like really break down the news, because you know, opinion is never news, but for me it is when I'm thinking about like what people are afraid of and what people are talking about. So I like to kind of look at that and help me dissect the news a little bit more too.
Yeah, well, I hope that we have helped paint a picture of and a better understanding of those bills.
I hope so.
I've had fun. I know Jesse would be so angry at us for not making more inappropriate jokes. And
hey, we made fun of Trudeau for like, we did a whole bit about Trudeau. I think we did.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I'll just send him that chunk.
Yeah.
Just for his approval. So. But I hopefully it was a useful discussion and that people can kind of, take it as a thought starter for themselves, I guess, to go and take a look at it. But my headline is that I'm not really hugely worried about it, mainly because it's a fun creative space that moves very quickly and changes all the time, and I think it's very hard for regulation to keep up with that. That's just where I stand.
I totally agree.
Cool. All right. Well, Katie, thank you so much for doing this. I want you to directly promote your newsletter or other things where you'd like people to go for listening to this.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me, Reese and Jesse from abroad. I really appreciate it. This was super fun. I am a freelance podcast producer, so you can find all of my work on katielore.com. Or you can read my newsletter about the Canadian podcasting ecosystem. It's called Pod the North, and you can find it on Substack, or you can just type in podthenorth.com and you'll get directed there. So that's my stuff. I try to write about Canadian podcasting and just help the ecosystem thrive.
Yeah. I consume your regular emails.
Thank you very much. Awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you so much. And hopefully Jesse will be back soon if he hasn't. Again, I don't know. He's doing this crazy volcano tour in Sicily at the moment. His mind has been blown by the fact that you can buy alcohol cheaply and then drink it in public in Europe.
Oh, yeah. I listened to one of your recent episodes and
there we go.
Heard all the pals that he made in the background yelling you to go fuck yourself, I think. Like, that wasn't very nice.
I know. I think he asked them to do it. He's really mean sometimes, but it's fine. It's fine. So it's all good.
Thank you, Reese.
All right. Thank you so much.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, dear listener, do you enjoy listening to us ramble incoherently about Canadian politics and history? Boy, do we have a special fucking treat for you. We've got our first ever official live show at a bar.
It's at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street in Halifax on Sunday, May the 26th at 8 p.m. And if you go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, if you look at the banner at the top, it will take you to the tickets so that you can book a ticket and come and spend some quality time. It is going to be a very intimate affair. There are like only about 50 tickets available.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to drink a lot. We're going to quiz. Reese is going to quiz me at the end, but he's also going to quiz the audience and see if they know more than I do. And any alcohol you buy, Reese and I, we promise to drink it, no matter how much it is. If you want to hold our hair while we barf in the plants outside of the bar, we'll do that for you.
So go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, click the banner at the top, and on Sunday, May the 26th, at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street, we will see you there.